Podcasting 2.0 for May 9th, 2025, episode 220, Blame the Box. Hello, 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 friends and countrymen. Welcome to the official board meeting of Podcasting 2.0. This is where we talk about all kinds of stuff and also about podcasting. It's unbelievable. We are a boardroom, and we're one that never signs an NDA because it's in our DNA. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama, the man who can build an onboarding process slicker than OnlyFans. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only, Mr. Dan Jones.
But not nearly as profitable.
Well, there's that.
The billion-dollar gorilla.
Is it fun? Is it fun doing the onboarding process? Okay, but maybe I should define fun. Yeah,
I wouldn't say fun.
Yeah, but it's something you hadn't done before. It's a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, I've done it with for like things that don't really matter that much. You know what I mean? Like, you know, okay, I've got this web thing and there needs to be a way to sign up for something, but like the index and the API account and stuff like that, where it's like, okay, I just need to take an email address, generate you a password, email it to you, and then I'm out.
An ideal world, that's exactly how it should go.
Yeah,
I got you.
Like when it actually matters to get all the details right, and you're thinking about security, and you're thinking about the 8,000
things that can go wrong.
Keeping in sync with Stripe, making sure that you are resistant to the 10,000 bots that are going to try to credential stuff you on a daily basis. Like, it's just all of that. And then it also has to be a screen that makes sense when you're selecting your product or whatever, that it's clear and it doesn't screw up on multiple screen sizes. It's just, I don't know. There's parts of it that are interesting, but it's a lot of it's just kind of tedium, you know?
I gotcha.
Thinking like a person who wants to, hack you and then trying to not be, and then trying to thwart yourself. You are low energy today.
I'm very low energy. I'm beside myself. I'm beside myself with anger and grief.
Anger. I'm going to assume this has something to do with vibe coding.
Yes. You assume correctly.
I feel you slowly hitting a wall.
Oh, no. I hit the wall 3 weeks ago. I've been just going on pure, what's the term? Just drive. I have to say, AI sucks balls. I've been working on this for hundreds of hours, Dave. Hundreds of hours. And no matter what I do, it gets it 75% there. And then when you start to tweak stuff, it creates spaghetti. And it can't even figure out what it's doing. I think that this one simple script is now 2,500 lines.
Yikes.
It won't.
That's a lot of lines.
It's ridiculous because it tries all this stuff and it's got all these try traps and then you say clean stuff up and everything. AI is stupid. Stupid. 100% stupid. I'm really, really frustrated because I've tried liquid soap, FFmpeg, ISIS, butt, MPD. And it always runs into the same trouble. It can't understand just some basic logic without, when you go into debugging, it builds crap. It's like the initial script is like, oh, this is going to work. And then the minute you start to say, okay, let's do this, then it goes to crap. It goes to absolute crap. This is not what I do. I mean, obviously, this is not what I do. And so I can see what code is doing, But once you're beyond like one page, I'm like, okay, now I'm kind of lost. And, you know, I can look at a code block, but how it all fits together. And then just all these try else, like, oh, no. It's not, you saw the code last week. It's twice as big as that now. And it still doesn't work. Basic concept.
Is it better at all?
No, not at all. It just keeps getting worse. It's like entropy. Uh-huh. It's pure entropy. It just keeps getting worse. I got up yesterday morning, 5 a.m. I'm working on this until basically 9. I'm like, okay, I got to get my no agenda stuff done, which is really 2 hours longer than I would have gone. Right after the show, I work on it until past midnight, and still it doesn't work.
So I recognized this obsession with you a couple of days ago. I began to see that it was becoming unhealthy.
It's beyond unhealthy.
The timing of the signal messages I was getting from you and the language choice you were using, I'm like, no, this is in his head. It's got him. It's got his hooks in, and this is not going to end well.
No.
I've been there, brother. And it's so bad because you get like this, you get pulled into a false belief that you're almost there.
Just one more iteration. And of course, this is podcast episode. So I'm sorry, James, I've been using Pod News. Pod News is the perfect test feed because it's got everything in there.
This is probably IAB certified downloads.
So oh, yeah. You're all good. No, I'm not IAB certified. So it's perfect. And the episodes are 3 to 5 minutes. So if I'm looking for a transition in between episodes, I'm looking for metadata to update, all that stuff, it's perfect. Bro, it's insane. It is absolutely insane. I don't know what to do. I mean, this should be 100 lines of code. Really shouldn't be all that difficult. And yet,
you know what I forgot to do? Oh crap! I forgot to.
What did you forget to do? Did you forget to tweet and toot?
Send out the things. Yeah,
I forgot to send us live. So there you go. That's my fault too.
But hold this on. Gives me a chance to test.
So all of this Nathan's bitching and moaning, no one needs to know about. No, I don't think it's fixed. He fixed it? Did he fix it?
Yeah, he said he fixed it.
Oh, okay.
We're about to find out.
It looks like so. Now this is interesting.
Let's see. Okay. Let me put that in there.
Oh, this whole server the server's not even responding now.
Oh,
my Linode,
test server.
Yeah. How do I reboot that sucker? Let me see. I can't even SSH into it now. That's interesting.
Not undefined.
Reboot. There we go. Reboot that sucker. Oh man.
All right, I'm gonna paste this.
Paste
this into the Mastodon. We'll see if it's undefined.
Is it undefined? Release the code. Chad, I wouldn't want anyone. I don't even want. I'm embarrassed to even send this to anybody. This is crazy.
We are not undefined. Yes.
Oh, we are defined, Nathan. Baby. Nice. We're defined.
Nathan, good
we
job,
exist.
Brother.
We exist. Yeah. That's good. It's good.
Nice work.
So you noticed my unhealthy obsession. I guess it kind of came through.
I've dabbled with a little bit of vibe coding on the GitHub. Using the GitHub bot.
Oh.
And kudos, Nathan.
Good job, brother.
We're now fully defined. Thank you, brother. So here was my first go at this was to I've been building a, and we can talk about this for a little while. Building a new
There's
parser.
Nothing else in my mind. There's nothing else going on in my head but this.
I've been building this, you know, as I have opportunities, building this new parser, mm-hmm. the new feed parser for the index.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, this is what it's like at the beginning of any new project. And this is you, this is, I'm going to emote you right now.
Do I want to hear this?
Yeah. This is the way these things start.
Okay.
Whenever you start a fresh project, a fresh coding project, you have all these dreams about what it's going to be. And one of the, you know, you think, you have an initial sort of sketch in your head of the way this thing is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it all so clearly.
Oh, it's never been clearer in my mind. I mean, I can literally flow chart this thing just right now. I can tell you exactly what it needs to do and how it needs to do it. This box, by the way, kicked me out, and now I can't even log back in, rebooted and everything. Maybe the box was bogus. Does that happen sometimes?
Blame
with
the box. That's a good one.
Blame the box. There we go. It's the box's fault.
That's valid. I mean, you have valid all out, you know, you have outs here. You can blame the box. That's okay.
Now, how about, I'm not a software engineer. How about we start there? Anyway, I interrupted your story. I want to hear what you have to say.
I honestly think that has less to do with it than you may feel. Because I mean, now it's obviously got something to do with it, but I don't know that it's the big, I don't know if it's the biggest issue. Because, like, so you flow chart this thing in your head, and it all makes perfect sense. And if you could just stop there and never write the software, it would be perfect.
In my head, it works so. I can describe to you exactly what it does. You ready? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, please.
You parse an RSS feed. In this case, it happens to be feeds.godcaster.fm/player_3.xml. I'm doing this from memory, by the way. I don't have to look at anything.
Yep.
You parse the feed and you're going to download everything that you don't already have from that feed, because believe me, streaming URLs and stuff, that's a death trap. If you want to restream something you're downloading at the same time, you're going to run into trouble. So you might as well just download them and create a cache. I'd rather have 2 terabyte drive than deal with that nonsense. That was the first 3 weeks until I discovered that just is not a good idea.
I'm sorry.
So you're then
get some of that. By the way.
So then you want to start streaming these to an Icecast 2 server. You want to start streaming them with the correct metadata. Now, the metadata you're sending to the Icecast server has to have a server name. That server name needs to come from the title tag of the channel of the RSS feed. You with me?
I'm gold.
Okay. So that's one that right there. That's about 5 days because you gotta parse that out. Okay. So that kind of works. That's working. Now, if you do not have any, what I call interstitials in your little folder, by the way, it creates a folder and everything and assets and, it, you know, it downloads everything by player_number
say,
name.
Say what an interstitial is. Though,
so that's between show one. And so in this case, Pod News is a test, but I don't want to use Pod News. I want to use the real feed. So you may get Fox News hourly report, which is 5 minutes. And then the next, and this, by the way, is you have to sort it by newest. So you want to send the newest thing out. And then in between the first and second item in the feed, ordered by newest in pub date, you have like, you're listening to Adam's funky fresh feed to stream.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And you can have a whole bunch of those. You want 5 of them. So you're creating a playlist, right? The minute you download everything, you're creating a playlist, and in between each of these MP3s from the RSS feed, you're putting an interstitial. If you have no interstitial, you use a default. And there's no funky fresh mixing, just play one to the other. I don't need any crossfades. I haven't gotten to that yet after 200 hours. So you still with me?
Right.
Yep. Okay.
Follow.
When the second file play, or actually whenever any file plays, reparse the feed, see if there's anything new or if anything has gone away. If it's gone away because it dropped off the feed, cleared out of the cache, if anything new has come in, download it and queue it up next. So right. Rebuild the playlist. So if I'm listening to Fox News business, Fox News report, and the minute that starts to play, parse the feed, nothing new, boom, okay, get the interstitial, you go to the next one, which is the Daily Minute, whatever it is. When the Daily Minute plays, check the feed again. Is there anything new? Yes. There's something new. Download it. Rebuild the playlist. Schedule that to play next. And then keep going. And repeat. And when you get at the end of whatever, how many ever files are in this playlist, start over again. But the key is you have to check. And really, I mean, I went down a massive rabbit hole trying to check like 10 minutes before, you know, or 5 minutes before the episode ends. Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
That sounds not good.
No, like FFmpeg is going to try and figure out how long that is, how much. So I dropped all that. Just give me the basics. And that's really it. And please make sure the metadata that you send is correct every single time, which is 95% of the time the MP3 files are done properly and you can get it. By the way, you're going to encounter all kinds of crap in these MP3 files, like images. You got to ignore all of that. Okay, I can get past that. But then you just get into the intricacies of these streamers. These FFmpeg is basically a huge pile of elephant crap, just jammed together with all these bits and bobs and the dependencies and all that. And I've tried it as a bash script, as a PHP script, as a Python script. And initially everything will start to look great. The minute you add some logic, it all falls apart. It just all falls apart. Completely falls apart. So that's really all I'm trying to build. It doesn't seem like a huge thing.
If I had to imagine, I would think that this thing that you're trying, that you just described, I would guess just off the cuff, depending on which language it is that you're looking at, with thorough error handling and edge case handling and all that, probably 2,500 lines of code.
Well, that's what AI has eventually created. But really, when you're, so this is interesting. This box is just not letting me in. That's interesting. I wonder if half of the problems were the box just freaking out.
What happened to the box?
So it's Linode, 4 CPU cores.
You should be able to get into it through a Lish console.
Okay, Lish. So I got, what's a Lish console?
It's just a way to get into the actual console, like as if a monitor was attached to the to the box.
Okay.
Like you can see what's actually on the output screen.
Okay.
Of the VM itself.
All right. So I just got a, oh, that's interesting. Lish. Okay. So I do my password and try again. Does it have a different password? Does it have a different password?
It should be your root password.
Oh, I see. Yeah, let me paste that to you in the boardroom so you can see what my root password is.
Yes, please do that. Please share with the class. I would think that this is what I was kind of getting at earlier, is all these things. When you first describe them, they are straightforward, but it's all the stuff it's all the little gotchas and edge cases. That's where you get,
Well, but honestly, like, Dave, that's why I love the Pod News feed, because it's consistent. It's consistent. And then the minute I just try to add some little different logic into it, it just falls apart. I mean, the AI, and I've tried them all. Mm-hmm. None of them can successfully complete it beyond, as I said, like a 75% success rate of it working. And all of them just create bundles and bundles of code. When you get to the point in a browser with your AI where it says, there's too many characters for me to output.
I like that one. Yeah. It's like you're over the token limit or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you see what I got yesterday where it said, I apologize, I apologize, I apologize. It was in a loop, yes, apologizing to me.
Yeah. It was telling you it was sorry over and over again.
Yeah. So it just doesn't seem like a horribly difficult thing to do, you know?
Well, so what I asked the GitHub, I was building this new parser. What I asked the GitHub agent or AI, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
bot, is initially I said, so I've got a working sort of framework for this parser, and I've had it for for a few weeks,
mm-hmm.
and haven't had a lot of time to devote to it. So I was like, I'm coming back to it now, and I was like, okay, what I would like to see is if what I have done so far, because I got a lot of hopes and dreams for this thing, just like anybody does at the beginning of a new project.
my hopes and dreams have been dashed.
your hopes and dreams are for it to just not lock up your box.
Yeah, I'm just deleting it out of spite. I'm just done with it. I'll start a new one.
You're deleting the whole VM?
Oh, yeah. I deleted it.
Man, nuke it from orbit.
Oh, yeah. Wow. No, I'm done with it. No, that's okay. I'm sorry.
Oh, now you're in the jaded phase.
What comes next? Please tell me what's next. What is the next thing that'll happen to me?
What comes next is Signal Chat. Hey, Dave. That's
what comes next. No. That is exactly what I don't want to get to.
You're resisting this. Yes.
Oh, no. It's not going to happen. It is not going to happen.
No. So, you know, one of the goals I have is for this thing to be modular. Like a few years ago, our main parser that's still working now is the Party Time parser.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we had, I forgot exactly how this came about, but Ryan, I ended up giving off the source code to Ryan Hirsch. Well, I mean, it's public source code, but Ryan Hirsch got it and ended up making some improvements to it and started using it for Podverse,
mm-hmm.
for their ingestion system. Well, then his version of Party Time just became an entirely separate thing because I'm terrible at JavaScript and he's really good at it. So he really just kind of like, you know, morphed it into an actual good piece of
software. Now, why is JavaScript the preferred language for that? Now that I'm an expert in multiple languages, I have actual curiosity.
I don't think it is. You're not going to get an argument like that from me. I'm writing is in Rust. I'm frustrated with the overhead of Node. Node.js as a parser is just, I just don't like it. I mean, some people have a completely back-to-back Node.
Some people love that stuff though. I mean, like, I guess it's like anything. You like Gruyere, you like Gouda, you like Swiss.
Gouda. I think some people some people are pretty good at JavaScript. Is mm-hmm. anybody really good at JavaScript? I'm just say pretty good at JavaScript.
Mm.
Some people are pretty good at JavaScript, and then they like to have their entire universe be
JavaScript.
That same language.
Yeah, sure, yeah, sure.
And that's understandable. But I mean, like I've been bouncing around between 10 different languages for my whole life, so it's not a big deal. So I don't think that it's the way to go. And the fact that I wrote it in JavaScript so long ago annoys me too. So this is a whole fresh story.
Old stuff. Like, oh, I can't believe I did that.
Yes. And so one of the things I like about what Ryan Hirsch did was he made it very modular. So it's very easy to just plug in a new tag.
Mm-hmm.
Each tag is like its own file in the source code. He's got it all nice and it's just so elegant,
sexy
the way that it's
laid. He's done it sexy, very sexy.
And I'm like, well, I want that here. I want that here too. I'm going to make every tag a module and that I can import and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And,
thank you, Baller.
I got a lot of it laid out and it's still pretty fresh and new. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop and I'm going to ask GitHub AI bot thing.
What is the actual name? Because we got to give names to these things. So when we're cursing
Copilot.
Them out, Copilot.
Have you tried Copilot? Is that one of the ones you use?
No. Cause I mean, GitHub is, I understand what GitHub does. It's never worked for me. I'm always confused. Where's the issue? Where's the comment? Where's the thing? Then it's one time it's in a drop down, then it's in a tab above. Then you want to download something. No, you need to go to the sources. You go to raw. I mean, I'm raw dogging the code, baby.
No, you're right about it. GitHub is a mess.
Thank you. I feel much better about myself knowing that. Yes, it's a mess. What are you doing?
So I had to put in my two factor.
Oh, you're two FA.
My 2FA. Let me see. I think I'm trying to get into the Copilot. Yeah. Okay. So Copilot is just GPT-4.0.
Does it do autocomplete? And by the way, please do not email me with all your fantastic tricks that you do with AI because it all sucks. Everyone's like, if you just do it this way, it works. No, and especially Brian of London, love you. No, I don't need to know. I'm giving up on this. I'm going to do it in basic.
So I said, write me a Rust. I'll save that for
some. Write me a Rust.
I said, write me a Rust program that, and I gave it out. I gave it the most explicit detail. Write me a Rust program.
I've been down that road. Yeah. Okay. Explicit. That, yes.
Uh-huh. Write me a Rust program that will take a podcast RSS feed, extract the items from it. And I said, extract the channel data and the channel nodes and the item nodes from the feed and convert those into SQL insert statements.
Seems straightforward enough.
And output those to the console and write those statements to the console. And then I said, be sure to include, and then I gave it a long list of tags, title, description, image, GUID, podcast location, podcast person, blah, blah, blah. Well, what it gave back was a main function with the beginning of something and then just stopped.
Yeah.
That was it. It just barfed. It couldn't, it did, it's like it started, it said, here's the thing you asked for. And it opened a main function and then just closed it. It's like it just gave up. It's like ... I don't think I can do that. So it just stopped. So then my next iteration of that was, I was scaled my instructions way back and I just said, write me, a Rust program that will extract items from a podcast RSS feed. And insert those items into a table with SQL insert statements, output it to the console, something like that. This time it worked fine. And it does, and it compiles and it runs like a champ. But it is way, way less. Like, I want you to take this thing and do this other thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, each one is only one step. Like, if you start to give it more than one step, it really does not like that at all.
Oh, really? So if you give multiple commands in one go, it's actually tougher?
Yeah, and if you say, be sure to...
Oh, blah, no, blah, no. Blah, but when I catch myself talking to like a human being, I get up, I walk around outside. I'm like, I got to stop this.
You walk the dog.
I mean, when I'm actually all uppercasing to the AI, I know I'm in trouble.
You mother. It's like, yeah, yeah. That's not going to respond. That's probably why I started apologizing to you so much. Because you berated it. But the reason I did this was, and the point I'm trying to get to is, I think really what this stuff is useful for is kind of code checking yourself against some, I hesitate to say best practices, but against sort of some popular ways of doing a thing. So because what these code bots are trained on is everybody else's code.
Well, and you know what? The universe is full of crap code, man.
Oh, it's full of garbage, you know, but GitHub has tons of good code on it too. And so if you say, you know, write a Python script that downloads a file from the internet and then displays it on the console. You know, you're going to get some, it's probably going to work. And you're also probably going to, it's probably going to do, show you this concise code in a way that's pretty good. Like it's going to show you a good way to write that code. And so I was thinking, well, I want to just double check myself and see if I have overcomplicated the thing I'm doing. And in some ways, I saw that I had overcomplicated it. And in other ways, I saw that what I was doing was actually pretty good. It was on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because if you can go through the code and if you understand what you're looking at, you can see quickly, oh, yeah, I see I could have done it this way. And you're like, you know what? That actually might be a better way to do it. Or you could say, I could have, or you can see that, oh, I could have done it this way. And no, that's not going to work. Yes, it does work in this code, but it's not, this is going to cause problems down the road.
What was really interesting at a certain point, and Grok has this think mode,
mm-hmm.
Stay away from the think mode because when
what
you
does
say,
that do?
Well, it's then it thinks about everything and it thinks out loud thinking. And so you say, oh, okay, Lord. So I eventually took a script that was working and I said, this is what it is. These are the two things that's wrong with it. And I said, think about it. Well, after about half an hour, it came back and it had basically written the script in 20 lines and it didn't do anything right. And then
oh, great.
Take into account that if you're using Python or, you know, you got modules. Oh, what? You don't have that module? Oh, pip install this, pip install that, pip, 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 install that.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
you're all over the place.
Sudo apt install, sudo apt install, sudo apt update, sudo apt upgrade. And then it goes through all these laborious steps. Every should test this, 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 test this. I just described what it has to do. And it can't. They can't do it.
I feel bad for you. Like well, I feel this frustration and I get it, man. Like it's the promise failed.
It's completely.
They made a promise and it failed.
Yeah.
this is not. I mean,
so the boardroom's getting bored, B-O-R-E-D. So this is not about AI. It's about something I want to build. I just want to build this. And, you know, I started in Liquid Soap and Liquid Soap, what a great program. If you have the right version with the right sources built, you know, compiled, and you have the right version and the right documentation for the right version. It's like this, it just doesn't seem like it should be so hard.
I actually think that, so here's another sort of thing.
Doesn't anyone have this? Doesn't anyone have this, what I just said? Hasn't someone built this already called, RSS to stream?
But Adam, I think the problem though is that I don't think humans are very good at determining how hard a problem actually is.
Hmm.
But we see it as a series of
tubes.
A series of tubes.
Do I still have that thing?
We see a vision of the thing complete and all of its working parts. We see it all simultaneously.
Yeah.
In our head. But if you actually take that thing and to us, it's like, okay, I can imagine all the parts and here's what is all, I can see it all working together.
Well, maybe.
But if you actually break that down into a series of linear events to say, do this, then this, then this, then this, you find out that that thing that you visualized, it's a valid vision. It does work.
Mm.
But getting there is way harder than you thought.
Is that the part of software development that really just takes years and years of banging your head against the desk?
I think it takes years of failure.
I'm packing 20 years of failure into 200 hours here.
Yeah. It takes lots and lots of failure to realize, to automatically know when something is not going to work and you don't try it this way.
So bitpunk_FM. Yes. Uh-huh. In general, the idea is to turn an RSS feed into an internet radio station. And what that means is you want to be able to schedule little jingles or station IDs in between the episodes. That should be at random if you have more than one, but never the last one you played. So that's that. And then the tricky part is two tricky parts. One is you need to continuously be looking at this feed, because if a new item shows up in that feed, which could be an hourly news report, as an example, you want to schedule that next. You want to get that up as soon. But even if it's a Joe Rogan, that's fine too. I'm not picky about that. Whatever is new, you need to schedule that in next and then keep going down the list. But if a new thing pops up, you got to put that in. And so that's the logic. And then
you're leaving out one critical part, and this is not just an RSS feed. This is multiple feeds.
No, it's one feed.
Like I'm saying, but the desire here is to be able to do this mix and match from multiple feeds, right?
No. We already have that. We have the Godcaster.fm feeds. It's one feed per player.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
The player feed.
So it's just one feed. It's one feed.
Gotcha.
I want to be able to run multiple instances of this program. Right. And then please, when a new episode starts, send the metadata to Icecast. Please. And then, you know, all the other bits and bobs, like set the server name according to the title tag of the channel. That's icing on the cake. If I could get the first part working, that's it. That's what I'm looking for. And I've described it a million different ways. I've done it simple. I've done it, broken it down by modules. And the most frustrating thing is, you know, to generate code, it can take 5 minutes. And then at the end, it'll just stop. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I didn't write the script because I'll do it again. And then it does it, throws us some kanji character in there that breaks it. Oh, I don't know how that got there. I'm sorry. Oh, I forgot the bracket. Yeah, that's it. Thank you for saying that. It just seems like, it doesn't seem like a hard problem to solve or that someone hasn't solved before. And I think that code is out there.
Yeah, maybe somebody has solved it, maybe not.
I mean, this is what Liquid Soap was built to do. Liquid Soap, I mean, that I've never gotten it to work in that. It's just like, dependencies.
Is Liquid Soap a program or a language? Or both?
It's a functional language.
Okay.
Which is, I think, a little trickier than other things, if I understand correctly.
And what interprets Liquid Soap? Like what do you write a Liquid Soap script and then give it to a program?
Yeah, binary. Yeah, it has a binary. Yes.
Okay.
But there's lots of fancy stuff. It's a script language. Here it is.
So Liquid Soap So you, do you think that, oh, it's O'Camel. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. There's another boy. I know a lot about O'Camel. Set your environment and yeah. And you got your virtual environment and your O'Camel environment. And you got your camel with two bumps and the one has water in it. And there's all kinds of camel stuff. You're smoking the camels.
What? So what is Azura Cast? What people keep talking about Azura Cast. Is that something that...
Yeah, well, that's just a front end to Liquid Soap. There's a number of programs out there, but the point is I need a command line. I don't need a whole mm-hmm. web server and a UI because I need to spin up 100 of these or 200 of these, one for mm-hmm. each feed. So I just need a quick down and dirty thing that just runs.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure somebody has written something like this before.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, I just think it's a little harder than you may.
Clearly. No, I'm all in on this. See, you know? I'm all in on it. It's harder than I thought it was. For sure. Yeah. For sure. I just nuked the whole box. I was so mad. And then I realized, oh crap, I put Nginx on that for reverse proxy. Well, at least I know how to do it.
So you had no backup and you just nuked it.
No, it's okay. Sometimes you just got to wipe the slate clean and start on a Saturday.
So the streaming parser, there's some interesting things here. So I've been fighting some parsing things. Really the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
The Ungovernable Misfits podcast.
Mm-hmm.
This has been a consistent problem.
What is the Ungovernable Misfits? Why do I not know about this? What is this?
It's just a show. They have a value block and stuff. It is podcast index ID 352598.
Oh, okay. the things you learn by heart at a certain point. Yes.
Served from Pod Home.
Mm-hmm. Which should be good.
Uh-huh. So the problem that, this is a bizarre issue. Frequently when they publish a new episode, I will get a ping from either them or Oscar
mm-hmm.
saying, you know, hey, my the feed is not updating in Fountain. And yeah. Whenever this
yeah.
happens,
we've seen this many times. Yeah.
Yeah, and so this is Linkin Park Rules. That's the owner of this
yeah.
podcast.
Okay.
And so Linkin Park Rules will say, hey, here's the same issue again. It's not updating in Fountain. And if you go and at that moment, if you go check the index website for their feed, none of the episodes will load. And for the first few times this happened, I reset. I just did a feed reset. After a minute or so, it was fine. Everything looked great. I'm like, that's strange. I don't like that, but whatever. It fixed itself. Great. And then, of course, then it keeps happening and it's like, oh, okay, what's wrong? Well, then I figured out that whenever that would happen, yes, that's right. It's only happening with Pod Home hosted shows. That's right. So when it happened to a couple of other shows. It happened to one of Randy Black's shows, maybe two. I'm not sure, but I've never seen this problem outside of Pod Home hosted feeds.
Okay.
So the next time it happened, I went and I just opened up Postman and did a call directly to the Podcast Index API for that ID just to get the episode list. And then what I saw was it was returning a 500 error. So internal server error. Yeah, I'm like, whoa, that's weird. And so then, so I got on the server on the one of the, on the front end servers and found the error. And the error was a PHP out of memory error, and that should never happen, because that on a properly configured PHP machine, the only real reason you should have an out of memory error are if you're trying to load some stupid big file, like a gigabyte file or something, like something silly, if you're just doing something absurd, or if you have a bug in the code.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, a bug that's just going to run, like an unending while loop that has a memory leak. So I'm like, okay, well, something's wrong here. And I look and I finally nailed down the issue. The issue was it had tens of thousands of sound bytes in this feed.
Oh, so it was running out of memory, I guess.
Yeah, it literally, the PHP FPM process was literally running out of memory trying to return the results that had something like 25,000 soundbite tags in it.
Wow.
And they were all duplicates. They were all just duplicate soundbite tags. They were the exact same thing over and over and over. And these things, and they were in the database.
Now, these are being generated by AI, I'll bet.
No.
Yeah, I think Podhome does that. Yeah, I think Podhome generates that with AI.
Well, see, I talked to Barry a few times about this, and he has assured me, he's like, no, we had a problem with duplicate soundbite. He said they had a problem with duplicate soundbites at the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
Like early after he launched. And I remember him having that problem, but then they fixed it. But something, I cannot figure out what is happening, because when the feed initially releases, it gets thousands of duplicate sound bites. But if you wait a little while, and I don't know what that time window is, I don't know if it's 5 minutes or an hour. If you wait a while and then hard reset the feed, meaning delete all the episodes and re-pull the fresh feed down, then all the sound bites are gone.
Ooh.
Which, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's hard to believe that this is a Podhome problem, because how would that make any sense?
Mm-mm.
I mean, Podhome's system is not going to generate a feed, then like a few minutes later, regenerate the same feed, Right. So I can't figure that part out. So what I ended up doing is, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to go back to the parser and put a limit into the number of sound bytes it's allowed to retrieve. So I've like put a hard limit now. It gets a maximum of 10 sound bytes out of a feed item, an episode. And once it hits 10, it just moves on. Like it doesn't try. It's not an unlimited thing anymore. and so maybe, that will solve it from here on out. But then, now I'm back in the parser again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at log output, and I'm seeing that occasionally we're having memory problems, and Node.js is running out of memory. And so this gets me back into the parsing world. So now I'm like, ugh, this again, because I thought I had solved that problem a while back. So I'm back to building this new parser, and you can have multiple ways of doing this. And I want to talk about this because of, and if you feel free to stop me at any time.
No, I'm listening. This is a interesting issue you're talking about here.
Yeah. So, you can kind of, you can do XML parsers in probably three ways, but two main ways for sure. You can do a streaming parser, or what I'm going to call a buffered parser. Okay, so the example of a buffered parser would be you grab the file, the XML file, you read through it and assemble all of your tags into objects, and then you output those objects to something else. Okay, so you're assembling an item tag into an object and then handing it off. And so then your code is going to get that object and do something with it. A streaming parser is different. The streaming parser sets up a series of events, and you dial up and tell what events you want to monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And so an event is going to be something like, an event would be something like this. It would say, you get an event for the tag started. So like, item tag opened, another event for when the tag ended, another event for when it hit some text within the tag, another event for when it found an attribute in the tag. So you're getting from top to bottom as it goes through the file, it's just firing off events based on what you told it you wanted to watch for. It's much more memory efficient because you don't have to read and buffer the entire XML tree in order to just get a few things out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you're parsing a lot of stuff, there's always going to be stuff that you don't care about, and you're grabbing it and discarding it as you go. So my goal from switching to the buffered style parser like we use now to a streaming parser, is to stop. I don't want to do this thing where you just translate XML into some intermediary object.
It seems like you shouldn't have to. Doesn't that make no sense?
Right.
Isn't that what XML is all about?
Yeah. See, that was my thought as well. So, you know, the way we're doing it now with Party Time is we're taking XML, transliterating it into some other language or object type to only then transliterate it again into a SQL statement so that the database can put it in there. So what I want to do is I want to go straight from XML to SQL. No intermediary steps.
Mm-hmm.
I just basically want to just transliterate straight from XML into a SQL insert statement, stick that statement in the queue, and shuttle it off to the database for execution. Bada boom, bada bing.
Yeah.
And you're done. Now, I mean, this does have added complexity, you know, and some downsides. SQL statements in code, they're not just text. I mean, securely handling SQL properly, you have to use something called parameter binding. So there's a custom object involved depending on the SQL library you're using, and you have to realize that the SQL statement object, you have to take a SQL statement object and, you know, serialize it on one end. Then when you stick it in the queue, then it comes out the other end. You have to deserialize it on the other end. And so both sides of the queue need to be using the same library. So you can imagine I've got the parser here. I want to send this SQL statement off to the database that's got this new episode data in it. And so I'm going to put it in a queue so that it stacks up and things get executed in order. Well, whatever's on the other end of the queue that's popping those SQL statements off and giving them to the database, whatever software that is has to be using the same library that you used to stick it in the queue. I mean, you could use two different libraries, but you'd have to use, you know, that's almost worse because then you might need to do like extra steps. That's pretty messy.
Mm-hmm.
So like I've got this basic code working. But the next sort of the next steps are, I am going to merge in some of the concepts from this vibe coding thing that I did to get in, because I like some of the ways that it's formatting the layout of the code itself. But then there's this next step that has to happen where you take all of the SQL statements. So what you get is like, you get an insert, a SQL insert statement for every single thing in the feed that you want.
Mm-hmm.
You get, you're inserting an episode, you're inserting a soundbite, you're inserting a chapter's link, you're inserting the insert over and over again. Well, you can take all of those inserts and you can batch them together. The SQL language allows you to do a batch insert, where you can just group a whole bunch of insert statements into one big statement. And the current version of Party Time does that. So there's going to be this extra step at the end where it takes all these inserts and converts them into a batch insert and then delivers that through the queue. That way you're only, you know, you may only be inserting, you may only be executing 700 batch, you know, inserts rather than 75,000. And that's just kinder to your database. So that's kind of where that whole thing is at so far. And we're getting there. But we really need this. We really need a better parser at this point.
So, exactly. So doesn't this exist? Hasn't someone already done this?
I don't know. I mean, maybe they have. And this again goes back to the hopes and dreams of a new project. If this turns out the way I want it to, then this can be, this would be a parser that anyone can use and adapt to their own needs. Yes, Eric PP, you're right. He says, it sounds like you're converting a stream of XML events into a stream of MySQL events. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's kind of a different version of my problem.
It really is. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You're trying to go directly from one thing to another without going through a bunch of intermediary steps.
Yes.
And some steps are necessary, intermediary steps are necessary, but you're trying to make those as lightweight as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. So if this turns out the way I want it to, we could release this code, open source this code, and then people could take this code and just adapt it to their database. So basically you would just take parser.
Okay, yes. And it would work with any database?
Yeah, because what you would do is you would just give this parser your database schema. You would map it to your schema and then just turn it on, let it go.
Wow.
That's the hope.
Two sides of the same coin.
Now try to describe that to Copilot. Maybe you should feed it the transcript of this episode and see what it does.
Yeah. Listen to this episode and build it. There you go. That's exactly what you want. That is the promise of this $1 trillion industry.
It's totally $1 trillion.
By the way, how beautiful is it that Cash App now does Lightning as predicted?
Oh, yep.
Venmo is going to be next. Venmo is going to be next. It's PayPal. All these guys are going to do it now, but they only do Ellen URL, I presume. I haven't actually looked at it. Have you looked at it?
Ellen, yeah, Lightning address.
Yeah, Lightning addresses, yeah.
Yeah, they don't do keysend.
Okay, because I have not seen it, but from what I heard from and what I read is that Stephen B. has this working with, I think, CurioCaster, but certainly with SplitKit and maybe some others, which is just awesome.
Yeah, he posted and said he tested it and it works fine.
And how Is it difficult to configure that? Can you use that as your wallet? I mean, is it something you can just strap on to your podcast yeah. app at this point?
Yeah.
Do they have an API?
Strap onto your podcast app.
Your podcast. Yeah. Can you just say, okay.
You can definitely stick it in your podcast value recipient tag. Yeah. As your LN URL address. And so, yeah, you don't have to.
Okay. Now the boardroom is getting a little uppity. He wrote it in liquid soap. Okay. All right. Got that's hilarious.
I don't know about, they do have an API. Yes. I just don't know much about it. I never really looked into it because we didn't.
Oh, okay. Stephen B says you can use it as your wallet, as your receiving wallet. Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Not as a sending wallet.
I think they have an API though for a sending wallet as well.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Welcome to the Cash App partner API, Cash App pay developer products.
No, another thing you got to sign up for. Here to get your tokens. Get your tokens.
Basic payment processing workflow. Now, I don't know about the Bitcoin stuff. No, let's see. They've definitely got an API to Cash App, but I don't know about the Bitcoin. Cash App, Bitcoin API. Sending and receiving Bitcoin.
Well, Stephen B says Splitbox does it. Oh, the Splitbox does it. Oh, okay. All right, I got to look into this. It's all coming together. It's all coming together. This is all happening. It always takes 10 years, and I promised myself this project would take 5, so we're about right. It's only been 5 years.
Only 5 years. Well, yeah. When you're like you, and you think in decades. 5 years
it's a bargain. I'm telling you,
It's a bargain.
What else has been going on in podcast land that we haven't paid? Besides the fact that apparently now we're a $7 billion industry.
No, that's bullshit.
No, that's only if you take Patreon. I mean,
YouTube.
If you put YouTube in it, yeah, I can see where that comes from.
That's what they did. They put YouTube
in it. Oh, they literally put YouTube in it. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, boys. All righty then. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, it said you if you have to put in Patreon and YouTube, you get to $7 billion.
Okay, yeah, that makes nothing but sense.
Do you have any post? I've been thinking a lot about the post Apple stuff, their announcement of the in-app purchase thing.
Okay.
You got any? Non-hot takes? Any cold takes on that?
Well, we talked about it last week. I'm not sure what has anything changed, or what do you have more thoughts on it?
No, it just took some time to process, sort of digesting it and thinking about how it was like. What are the possibilities of imagine a world where
Well, to me, it's like a boost button.
Yeah.
Now, not entirely. We need to get Sethi on because Sam Sethi, he has that hooked up into Apple Pay, and which I think makes a lot of sense because it's just a credit card payment. You're not paying an extra 30%, are you? Or you shouldn't have to now.
Not if you Apple Pay
doesn't
using
charge
Apple
you.
Pay doesn't charge you the
right. You should just be able to hit the boost button and it says, "Okay, pay with Apple Pay." Boom. Shouldn't you, or is that bending the rules because you're not actually linking out to something external?
Well, yeah, I don't know about that. I don't think you could do
people
that.
Want to know what Fountain showed me. I'm sorry. It's under NDA, people. I can't talk about it. But yeah, the Fountain boys will come on in a week or two and talk about it.
Yeah. You can't violate FRNDA. It's a
FRNDA. Yeah. No, you can't.
So the thing I've been thinking about, Windows Weekly this week, Paul Thurrott was saying that like the next version of Windows 25H2 or Windows 12, whatever you want to call it, is sort of looming, and Microsoft's hinting at it strongly. And they one of the comments he made was they seem to be re-emphasizing apps, like local apps, Look,
with Microsoft?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Oh, not cloud-based, you mean?
Yeah, like they're trying, they're like re-emphasizing, making the start menu sort of a center of the universe again and re-emphasizing apps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, versus just everything being web-focused. And I think that's pretty, that might be a sort of like a canary in the coal mine of where the future lies.
You mean apps versus web-based?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we've seen that. I mean, that to me sounds totally spot on. People, the app culture, and I've said this before, it's like when just observe somebody in your life, how they mm-hmm. operate, and say, you know, ask them to do something simple, and you know, look up this this concert, this movie time, or you know, 8 times out of 10 they've got an app for it, or they'll say, I've got Google, I've got DuckDuckGo, I've got, you know, fill in the blank. And they see that as a search app, not as a web browser. They see it as a search app. And they just type it in. And it's crazy because it's always at the bottom. This is the big thing I've noticed. They have the search bar at the bottom of their, it's a browser, but they don't know it's a browser. And it's a huge difference when you move it down to the bottom. People don't think of it as a place where you can type in a URL.
Yeah, that started with Apple when they they moved it to the bottom in Safari and all that.
Yeah. And so people type it in and then they just think that, you know, I've got a Google, I've got a DuckDuckGo. They don't see it as a browser anymore. By the way, speaking of such, I heard that Apple is considering stopping their contract with Google for Google search to be the default and use their own, here it comes, Apple Intelligence Search.
Where did you hear that from?
Let me see where that came from. It was it's like one of those messages I got from somebody. It came from Bloomberg. Apple eyes move to AI search ending era defined by Google.
Because that's been rumored that Google is going to be required to stop paying default search fees by the antitrust regulators, but that's just been nothing but rumors. So this sounds like Apple may.
I think it's happening.
I mean, they're getting a lot of money from Google. That'd be
It's like $7 billion or something. It's a lot of money, but in Apple terms, it's really not.
$7 billion. That's still a bunch. I mean,
there are days when it doesn't fall. Days when it doesn't fall out of my pocket. That's for sure. I dropped a billion. Oh, what's that on the floor? I'm sorry. What did I just lose? Yeah,
they made like $85 billion in the quarter. And so, I mean, $7 billion. So 10%. 10%. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, that's a lot of money.
You know, they've always wanted to be in the advertising game. They've always kind of skirted around it.
Oh, Nathan says $20 billion
per quarter.
Is that annually, Nathan, or is that
per quarter? That's poof.
That's surely annually.
But I'm telling you, Apple is always
$20 billion. There's no way they would give up that money. There's no way.
Apple has always wanted to get into the advertising game. They're willing to. They do play a long game. It's just no one. I don't think anyone has the vision over there over how do we make advertising not suck. I don't think it's possible personally. But they've always wanted to do that. And maybe that's what they're thinking. Like, well, if we do AI search and Apple Intelligence Search, and then we contain that in your special secure chip on your phone. So no one has it except we know how to manipulate it. And then, you know, they may be trying to do the old, well, I only want ads that I want. One of those moves.
Uh-huh. Sure.
It's possible.
I guess what I was thinking about is I was kind of already thinking sort of like this. And then when Paul said that this week, I was like, oh, it kind of made two things connect for me. Is Nate, as good as progressive web apps are and as good as the web is now, and it is truly, really, really good, it's still not a native app. It's not as fast. It's not as reliable. It does not have it just doesn't have the feel.
Doesn't have the feel. It's not the feel.
It doesn't.
It's the feel. I mean, they've really corrupted our brains with this stuff.
And RESTful APIs are slow. They have a slow round trip time. Even with really responsive servers, they're still, you have to pay that penalty. But I just think that what is a world without, let's say that this in-app purchase thing sticks and Apple and Google are no longer allowed to force app developers to only use their in-app purchase systems. And so then they can go, you can always easily go outside of the app to do your subscription management and sign up for new services and all this kind of stuff. It honestly brings the native app thing. It brings native apps back to the front, really. Because, you know, I mean, having a PWA is a lot of times you feel forced into it because they're going to hamstring you so hard if you go into the app store ecosystem, either through Google Play or, you know, or the App Store. If some of those restrictions are pulled back, and I mean, we're seeing it now. I mean, everybody and their brother is rushing to put, you know, signups back into their apps, links out to, you know, to do subscription management in their apps. And like, it really makes it where the barrier to entry financially to have a native app is just much, much lower. And then you can have your native app. If you're using something like React Native, which seems to be a great framework that people are just able to rapidly develop in.
Mm-hmm.
Things like React Native, you could have your app. It's almost as easy as writing a website. So then you could just distribute your app to all these various places. I guess what I'm trying to say is, I really think that this is going to be a landmark, if it sticks.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a landmark decision that may end up taking focus away from web apps back to native apps. And I mean on Windows too and Mac.
Mm.
You can have native apps on all the platforms without having to suffer for the privilege.
Mm.
And I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, TrueFans, I mean, I think Sam would agree with this. I mean, one of the reasons TrueFans was a web app instead of a native app first was because of all the garbage he would have had to deal with, of all the financial difficulties, the 30%. And all the rules, he just didn't want to have to deal with all that stuff. And he was sort of the ruler of his own kingdom if he could have a web app. And this may turn out to be a really important decision that brings levels that playing field. I don't know. I think we're going to look back at this and see that it was a bigger deal than we may have thought.
Yeah. The world is changing.
Have wider ramifications.
The world is changing, my friend. Things are happening right before our very eyes. And don't forget the stablecoin. Did they vote on that yesterday? You know, they
voted it down.
They voted it down?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
really?
It failed. Yeah. In the Senate.
Wow. Who voted that down?
I think all the Democrats got together and blocked it. That was my understanding. It had to have 60 votes to proceed. And
wow. 48 to 49. They had to have 60 votes?
Yeah. That was my understanding from the article I read.
Wow. So now what do they do?
Suffer. I don't know.
Thune took action to allow the bill to be brought back up for another vote. Oh, that's over for a while. That's over. Okay. Well, that's kind of a mini win, I guess, for the Bitcoin people. That's interesting. But what about innovation? You know, I had all those. It was so up and down the party line. So here's Senator Scott. These are all really short. Senator Scott, he's pro stablecoin.
The Genius Act establishes common.
By the way, just calling it the Genius Act. What is that all about? What are you trying to tell me by calling it that? Why don't you just call it the Stablecoin Act? No, it's the Genius Act. It's like, you know, the Patriot Act. It's like, yeah. This is not a good name.
The Genius Act establishes common sense rules that require stablecoin issuers to maintain reserves backed one-to-one, comply with anti-money laundering laws, and ultimately protect American consumers while promoting the U.S. dollar's strength in the global economy. This is about keeping innovation and opportunity on American soil rather than driving it overseas.
Okay. Loaded.
Now who,
loaded.
Was, who was that?
Scott. Senator Scott. The black guy.
Senator Scott.
Yeah. He's got
Tom,
power.
Tim Scott?
Yeah, I think it's Tim Scott. He's got juice. He's got juice in the Senate. So then the representative of the British banks, Senator Elizabeth Warren.
First, the bill ignores basic consumer protections that apply to every other financial product available in America. If you are sending a U.S. dollar from your PayPal wallet and you get scammed, the CFPB has the authority right now to help you get your money back. But if this bill passes and you're sending a stable coin from your PayPal wallet and you get scammed, you may just be out of luck.
I think that's a new thing. The papal wallet. That's the Pope. Our new Pope has instituted the papal wallet. And here's Senator Loomis. She, of course, is behind most of the stablecoin regulation, the genius bill.
This bill promotes responsible financial innovation and protects consumers. It's that simple. This bill also strengthens the dual banking system by creating a strong pathway for both state and federal stablecoin issuers to operate on a level playing field under robust supervision. Bleh. Wyoming pioneered digital asset legislation in 2018, and I'm proud to say this bill builds upon my state's hard work and success and framework that creates a very fair but highly transparent and regulated process.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of fair. I'm kind of glad this thing failed. Go Lightning, everybody. That stuff just works.
Yeah, Catholic technology. That's what the papal. The papal. It comes with Catholic technology baked in. That's
here's I got two more. Another pro guy, Senator Hagerty. I think he's from Tennessee.
Stablecoins can actually play a pivotal role in spurring modernization.
Modernization through stablecoin. Woohoo!
Whether it's improving transaction efficiency, freeing up working capital, or driving U.S. Treasury demand.
Yeah, there's the truth. Driving U.S. Treasury demand. That's what it's all about.
Finally, somebody said the quiet part.
Yep.
The benefits of a clear regulatory framework for stablecoin are immense. I want to acknowledge the hard work of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle who've worked tirelessly on this bill and have consulted with countless industry participants, academic experts, and government stakeholders to put together a truly bipartisan effort.
Where was my phone call?
And I want to underscore that the current draft is in the manager's package that's associated with it that we're going to vote on today will address the many claims that were lodged by the ranking member today, and they will clarify the fact that many of the claims simply just aren't applicable here.
Okay. Blah, blah, blah. And then the last one is Senator Also Brooks. Also Brooks? Are you Brooks? No, I'm Also Brooks.
I'm Also Brooks.
Also Brooks is all in.
It is critical that as we address emerging markets, we do so in the way that protects consumers, that drives innovation, and that allows everyone to participate in and benefit from these markets, and that also prioritizes American leadership. I believe that our bill provides an important foundational framework from which to build, and that today we have an opportunity to make positive changes toward our common goal. We've heard some concerns that our revisions to the state preemption language may have unintended consequences. And I'd like to thank Senators Hagerty and Loomis for their commitment to work with us to address these concerns and to do so on the floor.
Yeah, I don't think this is ever going to pass.
Well, I mean, if it didn't pass this time, I don't see how it could pass because it was very bipartisan.
It had the momentum for a while there. It had the momentum. But I think these people are all, the banks probably don't want it. Whatever. It's fine.
Yeah.
We'll just keep using Lightning. It's good. Lightning works.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I mean, look at the consumer protections are built in. Just look at all of these wonderful protections we have in our boosts that we've received.
Yes, so it's so protected.
It's protected.
I feel so protected as a consumer.
So
the stable coin, the problem for the banks there is that it becomes so low cost. They just can't gouge you on fees anymore.
Right. I mean,
if you have a pure digital version of the dollar, it just kills.
No, the banks should just, just buy treasuries and create their own stable coins. That's all that you have. Your JP Morgan coin, you'll have your Guadalupe Bank coin. Yeah, that's
Bitcoin. That was gonna be hot.
That's our bank, Dave.
I know. Guadalupe.
That's the beauty of Bitcoin. I am my own bank. The problem is people are retarded. And they forget. I'm sorry. They're like, oh, I lost my password. I lost my key. I lost my words. I don't know what to do. People have no responsibility anymore.
People act like these politicians act like if you get scammed and lose your money,
the government should be there.
Banking system that you have all these ways to recover. That is bullcrap. I've heard hundreds of stories of people getting scammed and not getting a dime back from the bank.
You
don't have, because the CFPB is not going to come fight for you.
Elizabeth Warren comes in on her steed.
Believe me, that ain't happening. If somebody drains 20 grand out of your savings account, you may get it back. You may not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just as dicey as a stable coin.
I know a guy here at the church, $40,000 he got pig butchered out of. He ain't getting that back from the bank.
No.
The bank's like,
CFPB. Call Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, come in here, help us.
No. Elizabeth.
Anyway, sats are working just fine. I want to prove it by reading a couple of boosts that came in. And look at this. Stephen B. boosts 1,000 sats from an app called LNURL Payment, which I'm thinking is the split box. And he says, split boost from Strike. And right before that, split boost from Cash App with 1,000 sats.
Wait, from Cash App?
Yeah, so
it hits the splitter.
The split box, which is beautiful. Right. This is a beautiful system. Of course,
Stephen B., you mad scientist.
He is a mad. Hey, make my streaming script.
Don't do it.
And then 1,000 sats from Music Side Project, which is also Stephen B. One QR code splits to all wallets. Yeah, exactly. We got 10,000 sats, which was a nice little mini baller boost from the Tone Wrecker.
Yeah.
He says, catching up on the boardroom boost with today's live show. Out of the loop. Well, you're back in. 333 from Anonymous. We're lit. Finally, yes. Once I finally hit the lit tag, I got my energy back about a third into the way of the show, man. It's been a tough week.
Yeah, I heard you pick up.
It's been a tough week. It's been a tough week. It's been a very tough week. Short Row of Ducks, 222, Salty Crayons. They're doing an early test after Node Albi Hub lockout after my episode was released. These scissors are getting heavy. Yeah. I've had that happen where, you reboot your start 9. And then it's supposed, Albi Hub is supposed to come back up. And then, I noticed, I've been boosting people. I've been sending sats, streaming sats. And I look at my podcast guru app, failed. And I forgot to unlock it. Because you got to unlock the Albi Hub. And it doesn't always automatically unlock. Or at least that's my experience.
I've been there with my Node before on that, not realized it for like a day. I'm like, oh crap.
It's bad, right? And you feel bad. Yeah. I feel icky, I stole that content. Pew. Let him pay for it. Let him pay for it. It didn't feel good. Hey, Dirty Jersey Horror sends us 1976 Satoshis. Y'all be good, he says. And Sam. Here we go. 1,000 sats from Sam coming in from True Fans. Stripe enabled iOS to web payments this week and support stablecoin. Oh. Glad True Fans uses the Stripe API. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Stripe does stablecoin and some, they don't do Bitcoin or Lightning, but they do stablecoin and something else. Yeah. Stripe is Stripe. Who owns Stripe? Is that a big banking outfit?
They're cell phone, aren't they?
Who owns Stripe? Let's see. Doesn't Jack Mahler's own everything at this point?
That's right.
Let's see.
Stripe is was founded by brothers.
Right? Yeah, looks like they're still in. They're probably worth something.
They have venture capital.
Oh yeah, oh, yeah.
Sequoia.
Oh yeah, oh, they got all the usual suspects. Hey yeah. Dave, whatever value for value have we received in between these two wonderful board meetings to keep everything running, to keep the engines going, to keep the smoke coming out of the stacks?
We got a PayPal from Oscar Mary of $200.
Whoa, 200 smackaroos.
Baller, shot caller, 20-inch blades on the Impala.
Thank you, Oscar Mary. I'm going to presume that's from all the kids there at Fountain.
Yeah.
But either Oscar way, and, thank you. Appreciate Nikki. That. Yeah.
Yep, that's right.
Thank you.
We got some boostergrams. Let's see. I'm going to make sure that I do this right this time because I got the timing wrong. I think
boost.
I think this is right.
Boostagram.
S3TH, I guess that's Seth, sent us a 1,008 sats from True Fans.
Ah, thank you. I see more and more True Fans popping up on the boost. Yeah, I'm seeing it happening. It's good.
Well, I'm seeing quite a few of these come through. There's this must be a stream. Yeah, this is a he's. Seth is streaming like 1,000 sats
a minute.
Like a
No,
is this a minute? Because that's 3:51 p.m., 4:06 p.m., 4:08 p.m.
No, he's just happy. He's no, boost happy. A bunch. He's boost happy. He's a boost happy.
Boost.
His stream action. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
This is automated. Wow, he just turned on his stream and let her rip.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Source D, that's Archie over at the Podverses. 1701 boost through Podverse. He says, more coding talk. Well, you got your fit. You got a lot of coding talk today, bro.
You got everything you need. No more coding talk. Next week, I'm just going to be like, oh, it's working. It's all good. It's all good. I feel good now. I'm fine.
You know what? I can identify the exact moment when you cheered up. It's when you deleted that VM.
Totally. I deleted the VM. Yeah, I'm like, I'm not going to figure out why I can't get in. I'm not going to use this shish kebab thing to get in. It's uppity. It could have been responsible for some authentication errors I was seeing. I'm just starting over fresh. After this, I'm going to walk the dog. I'm going to have dinner with some friends. And then tomorrow morning, I'll sit down fresh and I'm going to write it all out. And I'm going to just be real, real methodical about it. And what you told me today was very valuable. I think I'll just do it little bitty baby steps in modules.
If you're having a bad day, go delete a VM. And it'll just make you feel better.
It does.
There's I'm going to do it after the show.
Something very powerful about it. Like, I'm deleting you, bastard. Off you go.
I'm just going to pick one at random.
The only thing I'm sad about is crap. I had that Nginx all set up for SSL. Oh, well. And my OCaml environment is gone. Oh, no.
OCaml. The weirdest name of a language ever, but whatever.
And it's a weird thing. I mean, it's got a whole, its own environment. It has its own ecosystem. Who invented that? What else uses OCaml?
I want to say that I think OCaml was a sort of a concept language that influenced a lot of other languages. I think Rust borrows a lot of stuff from OCaml.
Hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, it's not used a lot directly, but I think it did. It's sort of like a, what's that? Was it Lisp? Lisp language had a lot of like other languages borrowed a lot of the concepts from Lisp, but not a lot of people program directly in Lisp anymore.
Except people who use, what's that editor? Emacs. Emacs is all Lisp based. Yeah.
Bruce the Ugly Quacking Duck, 2222, a row of ducks through Podcast Guru. He says, wow, Apple made a big change. It's a shame it took a judge for them to do the right thing. 73s.
73s indeed. No, that's how they operate, man. That's what big company, that's capitalism for you, baby.
We'll know that the earth has shifted when the Apple Podcast apps puts a funding tag link in there.
Yeah, right. Well, did you hear back from my guy over there?
Who, Ted?
Yeah.
Oh, on the funding tag?
Yeah, you said Ted, surface a funding button.
No, I have not emailed him yet. But even he won't reply. But I'll still, you know, that,
yeah, he gets it. He saves it all. He probably has to save it in some secret folder so no one at work can see it. He's communicating with those heathens over there at Podcast Index.
Yeah, it's like a one of those hidden folders where you keep all your porn on your hard drive.
I had it on my VM.
That folder's got all of Ted's porn and all of the emails from Podcast Index. It's pretty much side by side. Archie says 7777 through Podverse. He says, "Where's the Git repo for contributions? What are you trying to contribute to, Archie? I mean, you just look in the org. If you go to GitHub podcastindex.org, then all the repos are there. There's, you know, if you tell me which one you're looking for, I'll direct you to the right place, brother. Is that, are we at the bottom? Well, yeah, we got the delimiter. We got Comic Strip Blogger, 14,550 sats through Fountain. And Comic Strip Blogger says, howdy, Dave and Adam. Today, I'd like to recommend to your listeners the best podcast in the universe, a podcast called Accidental Tech Podcast. Wow. That's, I feel
dirty.
Like you've been slighted. Yeah.
Well, this is what advertising feels like. I mean, at least advertising is a dirty business. You know, say you got to do host read. This is a host read, baby.
I'd like to recommend to your listeners the best podcast in the universe, a podcast called Accidental Tech Podcast.
Stop. Back it up.
What?
He says, today I'd like to recommend to your listeners the best podcast in the universe, colon. Yeah. No.
Is that what I said?
That's what he wrote. There's only one best podcast in the universe.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I felt dirty.
Yeah, that's the No Agenda Show. But okay, we'll read your host read.
He's
riling me up.
He's daggering you in the side.
Riling me up, yes.
That can be found at www.atp.fm. This podcast is hosted by a Tumblr millionaire, Marco Arment. and two former software engineers who dumped their day jobs and switched to podcasting full time, Casey Liss and John Syracuse. They jibber jabber about software development, Apple technologies, tech news, but also cars and a lot of personal anecdotes and banter. Yo, CSB.
Well, thanks, CSB.
that's
painful. But a boost is a boost. A boost is a boost. A boost is a boost. That's a $14.5. What is? I saw Bitcoin was above 100,000 again. Did you see that?
Yeah, it's blowing up currently.
Really?
It's going up. Yeah.
Oh, I
haven't checked it.
You know, Adam's really consumed by something when he doesn't know the current bit. Oh, 103,287. When he doesn't know the current Bitcoin price, you know that he's consumed.
Don't you have a bit clock?
It's covered.
I thought you had a bit.
It's obscured currently by stacks of books and papers and ideation. And my studio is a mess. I'm living like a hermit, baby. I'm living like a hermit. I'm a mess. I'm a mess.
This AI vibe coding is not good for you.
It's not good for me. No.
Yeah.
But I have perseverance.
We've got some monthlies. We got Joseph Maraca, $5. Randall Black, that's Randy, $10. Thank you, Randy. Lauren Ball, $24.20. Thank you, Lauren. Basil Phillip, $25. Thank you, Basil.
Thank you.
Podverse, the boys over at Podverse, that'd be Mitch and Creon and Archie, $50. And Mitch personally gave us $10.
You guys are all so lovely. We appreciate it. And it was nice on the last boardroom to just stop for a second and just think about all the things we've accomplished. And I can't help but doing that. I was smiling most of the week in between, you know, vibe coding. I was like, look at what we've done, man. Look at what's been built here. And it seems like, you know, I think we had a real dip about a year ago. People are like, oh, what's happening? What's going on? But I feel optimistic. I just feel optimistic about it. Maybe also because you and I are building something based on it. But anybody can do it. That's the beauty of it. And then, you know, I know that the Fountain guys got some new stuff coming out, which I can't even explain. You know, they'll explain it. They're coming on the show in a week or two. And, you know, Sam Sethi's kicking butt and Mitch is, you know, recoding everything. So we're about to go into a new morning. It's a new morning in podcasting. The sun is shining.
New day has dawned.
The birds are singing. Podcasting is good again. Welcome to morning in podcasting.
Was this your Reagan?
That's my Reagan. That's the best Reagan I can do.
That actually sounded kind of Reagan-y. I'll give you six points for that.
Six. I get a passing grade. All right, everybody. Who knows what we'll encounter next week? Are we getting Rocky on soon? Is she able to come back? I know we bumped her.
Yeah, I had a mess up because I.
No, it was my fault.
You were
too.
Gone 2 weeks in a row, and I thought it was only one. So, and then I was like, and then I have not had the mental wherewithal to reschedule her yet. But I'm glad you mentioned it because I will do that today.
Yes. All right, boardroom. Thank you all very much for being here. Thank you for your boosts. Thank you for. Did we have PayPal's? That was the PayPal's you just read, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That was it.
If you want to support the index, we appreciate it. Go to podcastindex.org. If you scroll down to the bottom, big red button, you click on that, takes you to the PayPal, and soon available as a button in all your apps. Hopefully we'll see. Brother Dave, you going to be coding this weekend or are you going to take it easy or what's the plan?
Oh, coding always every day. And, but then, also, we've got my daughter is going to be in a band thing. Her rock band is going to be playing here down on Main Street.
Oh, cool!
They're having like a block. They call it a block party.
Nice. So
they're having a bunch of young people bands playing and stuff, and they're pretty good, man. Like some of these young bands, they did a cover of. One of them did a cover of War Pigs by Black Sabbath.
And it was
killer.
Man,
dude, it was so good. Oh, man. I was like totally jamming that. Yeah, there's some good artists around here.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and they're all like 13 or something. I was like, geez, man, y'all are killing it.
You need to start streaming them. Go lit from your phone.
I should put it on.
You can do it.
I don't have an open source way to do it now because No Agenda Tube is gone.
I don't have a
stream. I need your stream to be up and running so I can tap into it.
Okay.
I need your vibe code. All right, well, take pay off.
Good luck with that, Dave.
I'm waiting.
All right, everybody. We'll be back next week. Thank you for hanging out with us today. Great board meeting.
Podcasts are cool.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
I'm raw dogging the code, baby.